In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 14, there's the story of how Jesus went to dinner with a chief Pharisee, and it was on the Sabbath day. And the first verse of chapter 14 ends with the clause, "They watched him." They were watching Jesus to see what he would do. Jesus associates with all kinds of people. And when these Pharisees invite him to come to a meal, he's glad to associate with them. And it says there was a man there which had the dropsy. In other words, an accumulation of fluid in his body. And Jesus knows what they're thinking, and so he asks the question, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day?" Well, some of them thought it wasn't. Some of these lawyers, Bible lawyers now, and Pharisees said, "Well, it's all right to heal if a man's going to die before the next day." But some of them said, "No, you come other days to be healed." And Jesus raises the question. And then he heals the man and lets him go. And Jesus says to these folks who are watching, "If you have an animal that falls into a ditch or a pit, an ox or an ass, don't you straightway pull him out on the Sabbath day? Don't you folks deal with emergencies?" And this man with this bad a case of dropsy, and he wasn't able to get to a dialysis machine. They didn't have one. Jesus is going to heal him, and he's saying it's just as important or more important to heal this sick man than it is to get the animal out of the pit or the ditch. And they didn't know how to answer this. Now, Jesus is talking to this kind of people, and he tells a story, a parable. And he had noticed how some of them in the group were choosing what's called the chief rooms, the most prestigious seats. This is a little hard for us because we don't make that much distinction in where a person sits at the table. Very commonly in our country, daddy sits at one end of the table and mama at the other, and the youngest child sits by mama, and that kind of thing. But we don't make a great deal out of which seat is most honorable or important. And of course, this shows up at church. Now, in some of the churches that we know about, there's something of a scramble to get the back seat. But that's not because it's more honorable. Some folks won't slip out. Some folks have other reasons for choosing the back seat. But these folks wanted what we'd call the front seats. And of course, this is at a banquet now. And Jesus says to them, "When you are invited by a man to a wedding feast, don't sit down in the seat of honor, the highest room. Because a more honorable man than you might be invited. And then the host will come in and say, 'Move down.'" And they did that kind of thing betimes. And Jesus says to them, "When you're invited to a feast like this, go and sit down in the lowest room. That when he that invited you comes, he'll say, 'Friend, come up higher.'" And then the summary in verse 11, "Whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased." He'll be humbled. "He that humbleth himself shall be exalted." And then Jesus says to these folks, "When you make a dinner," or give a dinner, a supper, "call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither thy kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made unto thee, and you be paid back." Now, does that mean we're not to have our kinfolks for supper? This morning at breakfast, we had a daughter-in-law and her husband, our son. A day or two ago, there was another daughter-in-law and one of the grandchildren. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Well, you say, it says, "Call not thy friends, kinsmen." Yes, but here's one place you probably need a Greek Testament. The Greek is a present, phone. Do not habitually be calling. Don't just invite the folks that can pay you back. That's not what we are thinking about when we have our kinfolks, and Jesus is certainly not saying don't associate with kinfolks, not that. He's talking about the folks that'll only have the rich and the folks that can pay them back. And that'll be plain in verse 13. When thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, we'd say the crippled, the lame and the blind. Be concerned for the poor and needy. Now that's the heart of this. And thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee. As Christians, we ought to be helping folks who could never return what we give to them. And he says, thou shalt be recompensed, paid back, rewarded at the resurrection of the just. And in that connection, he gives another parable, the story of the great supper. And you see, somebody had said, blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God. And of course, Jesus doesn't disagree with that, but he's going to tell this story about the man that had a great supper and invited many people. And the point is, these folks that were invited just didn't want to come. And so, the supper is prepared, and the servant at supper time goes around the community and says, come, for all things are now ready. Now, they normally had two invitations. In a couple of weeks, I have an invitation to take my wife and stay for Sunday dinner. Now, I'm not expecting another invitation. All I need is one invitation, and that's sufficient. Yes, but these folks invited you several days or a week ahead of time, and then when the meat got done, when the meal is ready to serve, then a servant goes around a second time and says it's ready to come. And it's really not too different from the hostess in our country saying, well, supper's ready, come on in, or something like that. But they all, with one consent, in agreement, began to make excuse. They didn't want to come. And the first one said, listen, I bought a piece of ground, and I must needs go to see it. I pray thee have me excused. I can't come. This is right at sundown. And this man says, I've bought a farm, and I'm going out to see it. Now, nobody with money enough to buy a farm is going to buy it without taking a look at it, I don't think. This is just an excuse. He didn't want to come. And now the next one did the same kind of thing. He said, I've bought 5 yoke of oxen. I've bought 10 oxen. And I go to prove them. I'm going to test them, see how they can plow. At sundown, I pray thee have me excused. And it's just an excuse. He didn't want to come. Back in those days, nobody would buy 5 yoke of oxen without finding out how they were trained and what work they could do. And then the third one said, well, look, I've just married a wife. I can't come. And we're tempted to be a little more sympathetic with him. But as a matter of fact, if he's proud of this girl that he's married, this is the very time to bring her and introduce her to the friends and neighbors. The point is, these folks didn't want to come to this feast. You see, what started this was the man saying, blessed is he that shall eat bread in the kingdom of God. And Jesus is saying, and oh, how true it is today, there are so many folks that just don't want to go to heaven to sit down at God's feast. And they've got more excuses for not coming to church, for not coming to Christ, for not preparing to come to this feast. And the excuses folks make today are like these. They are not real. There was an old preacher who used to say that an excuse is a skin of a reason stuffed with a lie. Well, that's what you got here. These folks just didn't want to come. They were making excuses. And folks today will make all kinds of excuses for not coming to Christ and to God's banquet. And so The servant came back and told the master these things. And the master says, listen, go out quickly into the streets and lanes of the city and bring in the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind. Bring in these folks that we hadn't thought of inviting. We want them to come now. And they did that, and there were still empty chairs. And the Lord said to his servants, go out in the highways and hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. Now, that doesn't mean catch them by the ear or throw a rope around their necks. He's just saying go out and urge these folks to come in, persuade them to come in. And then the comment, none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. Isn't it sad that there are millions of people who have been bidden, who have been invited, who've heard the gospel, who have simply put off accepting Christ, and they'll not taste of the great supper, the marriage feast of the Lamb. And then, something that came up seemingly several times, there was a great multitude of people with him, and Jesus said to them, if any man comes to me and hate not his father, and mother, and wife, and children, and brethren, and sisters, yea, in his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And that verse worries people, and it's really not that hard. Now, when Jesus says, if you're going to come to me, you've got to hate your parents, and your wife, and your children, and your brothers, and sisters, he simply means you've got to love God more. Can I say it this way again? I don't hate my wife, and I don't hate the children, the grandchildren, and I don't hate my sister. Why should I? I didn't hate my parents when they were living. No, that's not the point. The point is we're to love God more. Now, somebody will say, hey, how you know about that? Well, you find that other places in the Bible where it's clear as a bell. If you turn over to Genesis 29, verses 30 and 31, long in there, it talks about Jacob and his two wives, Rachel and Leah. One verse says just plainly, he loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. Leah was his wife by trickery. The father-in-law had switched the maid of honor and the bride in the wedding. And Jacob never did love that girl as much as the younger sister, Rachel. Yes, but the next verse right by it says he hated Leah. And hated simply, in this sense, means to love less. Then you have the same thing, 9th chapter of Romans and over in Malachi, where it tells us that God hated Esau and loved Jacob. And it means there simply that God chose Jacob and didn't choose Esau to be the person from whom the Bible and the Christ and things like that would come. And I'm not just guessing at this. It's just a matter of how they use this language. But don't miss the big point. It says we've got to love God more. And so, whosoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Now, we've had this saying of Jesus before and talked about it. This doesn't mean that we've got to put up with our problems. This isn't saying, oh, my cross is these neighbors that won't let you go to sleep at night or something like that. Oh, no. This means death to self. That's the point of a cross. It's an instrument of death. And if self is going to be the center of life, a person can't call Christ Lord. And so, Jesus says, if you're going to come after me, you've got to bear your cross. Put self as the center of life out of the center. And he says, now, you plan ahead in all the other activities of life. If a man's going to build a tower or a building, he sits down first and counts the cost and asks the question, do I have enough money to finish this building? And he doesn't want the foundation to be laid and then find he's not able to finish it. He's talking about planning ahead. Now, the same thing over again. Jesus repeated things for emphasis. He said, what king going to make war against another king doesn't make his plans first? Sitteth not down first and consulteth whether he's able with 10,000 to meet him that cometh against him with 20,000. And if he doesn't think he can do this, then while the other ones are great way off, he sends ambassadors and makes peace. Now the conclusion, likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Too many people want to make Christianity a sideline in life. They want to live for themselves and for the material and to have a little religion on the side. And Jesus said, no, you can't do it that way. Unless a man's willing to forsake all and put Christ first, as in the word Lord, then he cannot be my disciple. And that's part of this planning ahead. The person who's thinking about becoming a Christian ought to understand what this means. And so Jesus says salt is good, but if salt loses its flavor, its savor, wherewith shall it be seasoned? What can you use it for? It's not good for the land. You don't want to throw it out in the garden. And it's just good for nothing but to be thrown out. And you know, Jesus had said to these disciples, ye are the salt of the earth. And it's possible for our kind of salt to lose its flavor. This happens when there's a whole lot of gypsum in it and things like that. And Jesus says, we are not to lose our salt as Christians. Salt works quietly. It keeps things from spoiling. It gives taste. Christianity is to do that kind of thing. Then the publicans and the sinners come to hear him. The publicans now the tax collectors for the Romans. And the Pharisees and scribes murmured, saying, this man receives sinners and eats with them. We wouldn't associate with that kind of people. Oh, no, not those awful sinners. The sinners were the folks who weren't members of their religious group. And, of course, the publicans were hated because they were in alliance and working for and with the Romans. And so Jesus is going to tell a parable to these folks who criticize him for just being willing to share with everybody. And he said, listen, you folks are concerned about lost sheep. And the point of it's going to end up being, I'm concerned about lost people. But which of you having 100 sheep, if you lose one, one of them doesn't leave the 99 and go after that which is lost until he find it? And when he finds it, he lays it on his shoulders, with the sheep's legs around his neck now, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls his friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, I've found my sheep which was lost. And again, we'll have to understand how they felt about animals. Animals used to have names. Cows used to have names. Not much anymore. We'll have some cow that has a particular problem. We'll talk about the black cow or the one that does so-and-so. But I can't remember hearing a farmer call cows by name in recent years. Oh, no. But these animals in the long ago had names and were pretty much part of the family. I think you'll understand that if you have some friends that have a pet dog that owns the house. I mean, that's the way it works out. This dog that has special meals fixed according to his taste, and whatever he likes, that you run to the grocery store and buy. There are folks like that. Well, that's the closest thing I know of to this. They felt that way about their animals, and so this man is excited when he's found the lost sheep, and he tells his neighbors and friends, and they have a celebration. Now, the point of it is, in the next verse, Likewise, joy shall be in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than over 99 just persons which need no repentance. Jesus says, you're concerned about lost animals and happy when you find them. I'm concerned about lost people. And Christians ought to be concerned about lost people and go and hunt them. And then either what woman, having 10 pieces of silver, 10 coins, if she lose one piece, doesn't light a candle and sweep the house and seek diligently till she find it, and when she's found it, she calleth her friends and neighbors together, saying, rejoice with me, I have found the piece which I had lost. Now, we've had a parallel passage to this, and I've talked about it, but our first reaction is that much sweeping and seeking for a quarter or a 50-cent piece or something like that? No, that's not the point. Most probably this is a coin. You see, it says 10 pieces of silver. That'd be 10 pieces of money her husband gave her, not as a wedding ring, but it was sort of a standard wedding present. And sometimes they wore them. Sometimes they put them in something like a handkerchief and tied them around their necks and wore them. And this is sort of like losing the diamond ring or the wedding ring. And Jesus says to them now, you folks are concerned about lost coins. I'm concerned about lost people. Likewise, there's joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. Now, the next parable that most everybody knows, the parable of the prodigal son, and that means he's recklessly wasteful, really goes with these others. He's talking about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. And we're going to find out that there were some people that weren't concerned about this lost son, the older brother. And Jesus says he's concerned about the prodigal. And so this man in the parable had two sons. And the younger one got tired of staying at home, like boys do today sometimes. And he said, Father, give me my inheritance a little bit early. Ordinarily, the younger son would get a third of the estate. And this man, now he saw that this is what the boy wanted, and so he divided his living. And the younger son gathered all together and went to the far country. And the phrasing is, he wasted his substance with riotous living. Now, that's why he's called the prodigal. He just threw it around. It had come easy, and he threw it away. Well, there came a famine in that land, and all of a sudden he's out of money, and he has to go get a job taking care of pigs, feeding swine out in the field. Now, this would be an embarrassing, disgraceful thing for a Jew to have to do. Because they thought the pigs were unclean, and they're so designated, you see. But anyway, that's the only job he could find. Says he was so hungry, he was just about to eat pig feed. And then in verse 17 of chapter 15, he comes to himself. He thinks it over and comes to a decision. He said, how many hired servants of my father have bread enough to spare, and I'm about to die of hunger? And he makes his decision. I will arise and go to my father. I'll go back to my father. And I'll say unto him, Father, I've sinned against heaven. And that means I've sinned against God. That's regular expression with them. I've sinned against God and before thee. And I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. The perfect illustration of repentance. He had changed his mind and turned around. He'd found out that the far country wasn't what he thought it was going to be, that the things of this life didn't satisfy him and actually left him in desperate need. And he was going to go home and say, Daddy, give me a job. Now, he arose and came to his father. And when he was a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. Their way of greeting somebody that you love. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But he never got his speech finished. He'd memorized it. Daddy didn't give him a chance to finish. The father said to the servants, bring forth the best robe, the kind that you put on a son, and put a ring on his hand. He's a free man, not a servant. And put shoes on his feet. Now, shoes to these folks meant that you were somebody in authority, not a slave. The servants would go barefooted and bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat it and be merry. This my son was dead. So far as family was concerned, now he's alive again. He's lost and he's found. And the older son was out in the field working. He came home and found out there was a party going on, the music and the dancing. And he called another servant and said, hey, what's going on here? And they said, your brother's come and your father's killed the fatted calf and they're having a celebration. And the older son was angry and he wouldn't go in. And he's unhappy, just the way these Pharisees were unhappy about the publicans and the folks they call sinners coming to Jesus. This man wasn't happy to see the younger brother come, but the father was. And the father begs this older son to come in. And the older son complains he's been working all this time and he never had a party like this. And the father said, all you have is that I have is yours. The estate's yours. But this, your brother, was dead. So far as the family's concerned, he's alive again. He was lost and is found. Jesus is concerned about lost people, the ones who've wandered away, even if these Pharisees aren't. May God give us that kind of concern for the lost people of this world.